You're recording.
All right, we are back in open session. In case number 1971, Solomon, you are the lead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm moving on to executive session for, to discuss medical issues.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, you may want to ask Dr. Roy if she would like to go into executive session to discuss if she's okay discussing them in open session. And at any point, she could always ask that we go into executive session.
Did you hear?
That's fine. I'm not, you don't have to go into executive session. You can just ask me what is appropriate.
I'm drawing a motion.
Just to make it clear, if you want to go into executive session, just speak up and let us know.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Roy, first we'd love to hear about your trip to Israel.
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. We traced the path of Jesus from Bethlehem to Nazareth. We went around the Sea of Galilee. But Jerusalem was definitely the high point. We got to go on the Mount of Olives and Gethsemane, and I think to see, go into Jesus' tomb and touch it and realize that they had to dig a little extra for Jesus because his head was a little bit longer than Joseph of Arimathea, who was a shorter man. So that was so interesting. And then go to Calvary, and then last I got baptized in the Jordan. So I got to rededicate my life to the Lord, so it was incredible. I mean, I came back just spiritually full.
That sounds like a wonderful and very purposeful trip.
It was probably the best trip I've ever taken. Thank you for asking.
You bet. I noted that we do have a recent drug test, and it looked from November the 29th, and everything looks fine. I do have some questions for you, Dr. Roy, regarding your cover letter. You mentioned QC Kinetics, and I looked through the information that was submitted and didn't see a doctor, an MD, a DO, FNP, an RN. Is there a doctor in particular that you're dealing with there who's going to provide a consent agreement?
That's a wonderful question. And the answer is not yet. And so at first, although they do have my consent agreement in there with my holder, the doctor, I don't meet the doctor until they do the bone marrow biopsy, which is January 19th. At that time, and I put that in my letter just because since I haven't met him yet, at that time I'm going to give him the thing that he has to put on his, to write for his cover letter that says, for the drug. So at that time, once I meet him, I'm definitely going to, give him the appropriate, everything that I need to do. The form saying that he knows about the consent agreement and the substance abuse history that he will transfer onto his letterhead. Because at that time, he is going to prescribe one Valium pill to do the bone marrow biopsy. But right now, I haven't met any doctors. It's just been the nurse who injected my own plasma.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of staff, just to clarify. And do we need that consent agreement confirmation by a medical professional prior to a procedure or prescription being given?
Let me look at the language of the consent agreement, and Mark, you might want to look as well.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Jane, what was the specific question?
Is the notification by the acknowledgement of the consent agreement by the physician or medical professional necessary before procedure is done that includes the prescription of benzodiazepines?
Mark, I think that's paragraph 17, possibly 18.
It sounds like otherwise we'd be getting it in essence after the fact.
Yeah, it does. I think, thank you, Mario. Paragraph 17, and I don't know if everybody has it in front of them. If not, I'd be more than happy to, I think, read.
Please.
It says, prior to receiving treatment from any other medical provider, respondent shall notify the medical provider of respondent's history of substance use and of the existence of the disorder. During the course of the order, respondent shall cause any and all providers to notify the board of their awareness of respondent's history of substance use, board order, and notification of any medications ordered by the provider. The notification shall be made in writing within one week of the provider's issuance of the prescription.
So can we do that after the fact? As long as it's within a week?
1 week prior.
One week after,
I think.
That's the prescription.
Okay. Yeah, yes. So they can prescribe and then let us know at the same time, as opposed to waiting a week to pay or whatever. Yeah,
But, you know, again, there is that pre-notice as well.
Pre-notice, yes, and pre-notice needs to be done before the procedure.
Correct.
Right, so I've already given them my consent agreement. They have a copy of the consent agreement. So I was just going to give the doctor that day everything so he can just transfer it onto his letterhead since we haven't met him.
I think that would suffice.
Yeah, so she has to notice the doctor before the procedure, but does the doctor have to acknowledge us before the procedure, or does just the week of the prescription? Because, like, when you have a doctor working in another veterinarian, we have to make sure that veterinarian knows they have a consent agreement or something.
Yeah.
Or does this doctor just have to know?
Yeah, and it doesn't say whether it's before or after.
Okay.
It just says that during the course of the treatment, they need to notify us that they have received the consent agreement. They're aware of, you know, the concerns and the parameters.
And that's something more to have to deal with. That doesn't happen in front of us. Right.
Right.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure we're not impeding that stuff or needing that other procedure. So.
Yeah, I think it would only come back if we're aware that there wasn't a compliance, of any of these provisions.
Okay. Dr. Roy, did you hear that discussion?
Yes, ma'am, I will. That is exactly what I was intending to do, and I will make sure that day, I'm handing him everything that day. I will make sure.
I do have some questions regarding three inconsistencies in the medical records that you voluntarily submitted. And
yes,
hoping you can clarify those.
Who is your current PCP? Well, I can too.
Who is your current PCP?
Sean Flash, the Cornerstone. Everybody there at Cornerstone YC.
Okay. And Sean Flash has been prescribing for you since 2011.
Oh. Yes, ma'am. Maybe even before. I don't want to lie to you. I might even be a few years before. I don't want to.
Okay.
But yes, for a long time.
Okay.
Very consistent. I haven't switched any doctors.
Okay. But your designated medical professional is, for purposes of the consent agreement.
Karen, was she? I can't say the last. I can't remember the last name. But they work together. I believe it's Ridenour.
Yeah,
Ridenour. Thank you. You're right. So sometimes I see her, sometimes I see Sean. Mostly I see her because Dr. Flatt doesn't work so much there anymore. I haven't gone in a long time because I only get gabapentin, and they just rewrite it. I to be very, very honest, I haven't been in a while, like a long time.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Solomon, maybe I can help with this. Paragraph 15 of the consent agreement says during the duration of this order, respondent shall select one medical provider to coordinate her health care needs and to be aware of all prescriptions she utilizes by her respondent. So, Ms. Solomon, does that help lead to what I think we were trying to get to? Was does that one person, Dr. Ridenour, know about all the prescriptions that you have?
Yes.
Yes. I've got every single thing. Everywhere I go, I have everything faxed to Cornerstone, and I have everything back to you guys. I try not to leave anything out. I hope I haven't left anything out.
Just to clarify, by faxing the cornerstone, that doesn't ensure that is, but that is it Dr. Wright now or FNP Wright now?
Yes.
Gets the record. So do you fax them to her at cornerstone?
Do I fax them? The ones from like the Tucson ER Hospital and those things? No, but you're right. Maybe I should be doing it myself. Are you saying that something didn't get there?
No, I'm trying to make sure they get to the person you designated as part of the consent agreement who's responsible for coordinating and reviewing all your medical care. And that is not Dr. Platt.
You're correct. I should be writing Dr. Wright now on the correct.
Yes. Okay.
You're correct. I'm sorry. I wasn't understanding the question.
Okay. Yeah, and there was an inconsistency, as I mentioned, between Tucson Ortho showing that Platt was the PCP and QC Kinetic showing your PCP as Sunny right now.
Yes.
Which one? Okay. So which one is your PCP?
It's Sunny right now.
Okay. So she's responsible for the overall compliance for the role of a medical professional and the consent agreement as well as your PCP.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Glad you clarified that. Okay, a couple of other items particularly in the Tucson Ortho Orthopedic Institute records. One was that you denied a history of drug use.
So this is the problem with that, is that they asked me if I used illicit drugs, and I said no, because I thought that, well, correct, I don't, and I never have. But that was the question. And then when I looked on the record that the doctor had transferred, it was written a different way. And that's the same thing. This place is terrible with their records. That's the same thing with the drugs. I haven't been on Belvique since 2019, and the drugs weren't even in there. And that made me really angry that the drugs that I wrote were in there, and a drug that I'm not even on was in there. And I think it's because they just transferred the records from the hospital, because it's in a hospital that I've been to before, like a long time ago. So I went in there personally, and I handed them, you know, saying, these are the drugs that I am on. And I also rewrote something saying that although I am not on any illicit substances or any alcohol, there has been an opiate use disease prior to 2018 of July. And I wrote that in, and I said, please put this in an addendum. And I'm not seeing anything faxed back to Victoria, which makes me a little bit angry. I'm not quite sure how to, you know, go farther with this.
Has the Tucson Orthopedic Institute received a copy of the consent agreement?
Yes, the Tucson Orthopedic Institute has a copy of the consent agreement, yes.
Okay.
But that's it, yes.
Okay.
But I will not be getting drugs from them, and I will not be following up with them, because I think their consistency of care is terrible.
Okay. I have one further question I have on the QC Kinetics, which you alluded to before. I didn't see any reference to an MD, an FNP, an RN, and their letterhead was Salesforce. So is there a responsible medical person for QC Kinetics?
Yes, and his name is Dr. Abram Aguilar, but I have not met him yet.
Okay.
I haven't even had any contact yet. So he would be the person that will be the day of the procedure will be all about him.
Okay. And I hope your recovery from the bone marrow biopsy is speedy. You haven't had one that can be a little painful, so.
Don't tell me that.
That's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
So, are you done with your question?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk about. This is Dr. Wright. I want to make sure that we are controlling the pain as adequately as we can, still within the confines of the agreement, and not putting you at risk for any kind of future issues. Do the doctors think that the value one pill alone is going to be enough to control all this pain?
They told me that they normally prescribe opiates, and I said, absolutely not. Yeah. I don't want that. So they said, well, we can just give you the value just for the procedure. And I said, I would rather do that and be in pain than receive something I'm not supposed to be on. I don't want to put myself at risk for, you know, not being within my consent agreement. And that's important to me.
No, and it's important to us too, but it's also to me personally, I don't like pain. I don't know if anybody does, but I'm sure there's some people that don't like pain. So I want to make sure that you're not in pain. And again, I want to make sure that we're dealing with a consent agreement, but I also don't want to force you into like a civil war or here at Biden's leather strap, we cut your leg off and just hope for the best. So I want to make sure the doctor thinks that we are able to control this adequately so that we're fair to you, while not still putting you at risk for potential relapse or something like that. So I just want to make sure that the doctor is okay with this. And if one dose of Valium is okay, great, I'm happy with that. But I don't want to force you into pain just to go through the confines of the consent agreement. We want to keep everybody safe, but also fair. So I hope that makes sense.
It does, and I will discuss this with him when I meet him. I mean, they say that I'm going a little bit extra, like, well, that I'm doing things a little bit different than the rest of the patients because of the consent agreement, and they know that. Because I haven't met the actual doctor, I've only met the nurses, she's already discussed with me that I'm going to be in a lot of pain. It might be 5 days. I don't know if you agree with that since you've already had it, but she says, you know, you've probably been in a lot of pain before and you can take NSAIDs, and I think that's what I'll have to do.
Okay, I mean, we would know from, again, not just your histories in general, people in chronic pain, that can cause relapses too. You can start seeking for things that are definitely not prescription at that point. So, I just want to make sure we're keeping you safe, keeping everybody on the right track. I don't want you to think I'm thinking of that. That's not where it is. I just want to make sure that you're
right, of course.
Out of pain, because I hate pain.
I hate pain. I think I just know that I'm a little bit scared about this. Everyone's told me to be scared.
And that's all I'm for, too.
So maybe, I mean, I would be comfortable if he said, okay, maybe you need one more Valium or something like that. Yes. I'd be okay with that, as long as it's not an opiate. I would be, I would feel safe, and that it was the right thing to do if the doctor said that. So I just we'll have to have that conversation with him on the date of the procedure, unfortunately, if that's okay.
No, yeah, and I mean, again, as long as he lets us know within a week of whatever changes, that should fall within the consent agreement. Correct. So I think that'll be okay, again, using best judgment. And I would also ask about alternatives for things. I mean, outside of opioids, we have 18 million different pain medications on the back.
Right, exactly.
On the human side, they just have morphine, and that's it. I mean, my grandma was dying of cancer, and they could give her morphine to the pain, which caused her to grow up, which caused more pain, which caused more morphine, and I'm like, seriously, think about this stuff. So I would just, again, encourage you to ask about alternative pain medications and see, is there anything else they can think of? Because I just want to make sure that you're not suffering through something just because we wrote stuff on paper.
Right. Yes. And I have a chelator here, which is a therapeutic laser here at the clinic that at my husband's clinic that I can use. So I could use that, and that will help decrease some of the inflammation associated with that, hopefully.
just to let you know, everything here is recorded and on record, and I don't know if OSHA is okay with that, but so I'm not going to say you can do that, but you do you. But I just wanted to speak my piece on that and make sure that we're not suffering pain for 5 days just because it makes us feel bad.
Doctor,
I appreciate it.
I wish you good luck with that and a speedy recovery. Are they going to be administering any pre-procedure sedation that you're aware of, other than the one value?
Just the one value, that's all they're going to do.
Okay.
I told them that I was only comfortable with doing this as minimal as much as possible. It would make me happy. I really, this integrated means a lot to me, and I put a lot of work into it, and, you know, it means a lot that I stay within it.
Yes.
And we appreciate that. Yeah. We're also human beings and we're empathetic, so.
Yeah, but again,
thank you for doing that, for sure.
Yes.
That concludes my questions of Dr. Roy, and congratulations on your continued success in your recovery. It's great to be a part of it, so thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here today, Dr. Roy.
Okay.
All right, so we are going to move on here, and I guess let's go straight down the list. Next up is section three, informal interviews, board deliberation and action 21-123 in regards to Edwin Keith with EBM. Continuance of informal interviews, November 17, 2021, for the purpose of receiving additional information and reviewing possible action to approve proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, and adopting an order. Dr. Wright is the lead.
Yes, thank you. So I would make a motion to accept the findings of fact as our findings of fact and the conclusions of law as our conclusions of law.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to find the conclusions. Findings of fact as our findings of fact and conclusions of law as our conclusions of law. Any discussion? Roll call.
Dr. Brunner?
Aye.
Mrs. Greer?
Aye.
Mrs. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Jeans?
Aye.
Mrs. Willoughby?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Mrs. Sutton?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Ritz, aye. Motion carries. So, this is prior to now.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Dr. Kiesel has five past disciplinary actions and two letters of concern as follows. In 1992, he was required to pay a $50 civil penalty because he was operating a vaccination clinic without premises license. In 1998, he was issued a letter of concern related to medical records.
In that was
2002, a letter of concern related to failure to provide medical records to the client, along with failure to record pertinent information in the records. So medical records. In 2017, we have his license was placed on probation for 1 year related to these violations. ARS 32-2232-18 related to R311-502B, failure to ensure that emergency information is on the Arturo's voicemail. ARS 32-2232-21 related to R311-502L5, failure to document a diagnosis in the reviewed record. ARS 32-2232-21 related to R311-502L6, failure to document treatment of a pet in the record reviewed. ARS 32-2232-21 related to R311-502L7B, failure to document amount of propofol administered to the pet. ARS 32-2274A4, failure to maintain a controlled drug inventory log for midazolam. As noted, his license was placed on probation for 1 year to complete 10 hours of CE, 8 in medical record keeping, and 2 in communication, and he is required to pay a $500 civil penalty. Also in 2017, he had another case that resulted in disciplinary action. The violation was ARS 32-2232-12 related to R311-511. Failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures for failure to perform a dental as indicated on the surgery admitting form. ARS 32-2232-21 related to R311-502-H1, no surgical authorization obtained from the pet owner prior to anesthesia, His license was placed on probation for 2 years, and he was required to complete 16 hours of CE, 6 in dentistry, and 10 in medical rapid-acute. In 2018, there were 2 cases which were eventually ended up being combined. The first one, the violation was ARS 32-22-3222, medical incompetence. Lack sufficient knowledge or skill to a degree likely to endanger the health of the cat. ARS 32-22-3221, related to R311-502, no discharge, discharge instructions documented in the record on 2 different dates. ARS 32-22-3221, as it relates to R311-502H1, no signed authorization was obtained for general anesthesia or surgery on 2 dates. ARS 32-22-3221, related to R311-502L4, no results examined in medical record on 1 date. The combined case violations were ARS 32-22-3221, related to R311-502LB, failure to document the amount of convenia administered. ARS 32-22-3221, related to R311-502LD, failure to document the route of administration of convenia administered in the cat. Because of these 2 combined cases, his license was placed on probation for 2 years. He was required to complete 14 hours of CE. 4 was in client communication, 8 in anesthesia, and 4 in veterinary ethics related to client communication. And he was required to pay a $1,750 civil penalty. So those were those 2. And that is it.
Okay, thank you. So, definitely would like people's opinions on this, because I'm going through in this case right now, we have 10 violations. And a lot of medical records things, which we just heard, has been a historic issue. We've had a lot of community education around these medical records issues. That's changed. Another concerning thing was we had in there a failure to perform a dental cleaning. That was expected, and in this case, we forgot we actually did a procedure in the beginning for whatever reason that was. That's very concerning. When I was going through here, basically there's 3 broad categories when I'm looking at kind of the issues and continuing education and these kinds of things. We're at client communication, medical records, and anesthesia itself, because we were missing the 15 minutes recording. But in light of these things keep happening over and over and over and over again, over a history of 1982, that's very concerning to me. We've already had, again, huge violations, or huge civil penalties, the probation for multiple years, lots of continuing education. I can't remember, last time we did 10 hours or something. So, is more of the same going to change anything? And that's very concerning for me right now.
We've had another case similar to this where the concern was about, regardless of what we do, are they fit to practice like at this point in the career, and you're 40 years in practicing?
I can name the case, but I didn't necessarily want to. But it was one where we consented to phase out of practice. We limited what could be done and then phase out of practicing. Is that something that anyone would be open to at this point? Because I kind of feel like no matter what you suggest, I'm going to be like, okay, it's not right for him. I don't feel bad for these people to get in these positions, but I just feel like it might take some different action.
And if we, again, without talking about that case, we have to make sure we place black practice restrictions when people keep doing the same thing. Because if we're thinking about the same case, we said don't do this, and this can happen. and that was a whole bad situation. But I agree. I don't see a change. We're not going to change it at this point. We've tried it, we've gone down this road many, many times. And that's kind of our thing too, is this something that we can talk about? Maybe now, maybe it's a legal question, how if we have to go to executive session for something like this, but yeah, I'm more concerned around it, or if it's a practice anymore.
And then I just, I would ask the question, why phase out instead of revoke?
It's kind of a lot of reasons, kind of a lot of personal reasons too, along with kind of like a dignity type thing, being like, hey, we're not revoking the license, we're gonna say, just kind of don't use it anymore, don't renew the license.
Respectfully.
Let's people bow out.
Yeah.
So it's gonna like bow out, I mean, it's, yeah, can you revoke a license? Yeah, you can go through proceeding and do that, but there's, when you're taking away somebody's ability to make a living, there are a lot of legal ramifications to that. It's a very difficult thing to revoke. Also, once we revoke, we have no power over it. So, there are a lot of reasons to do different things. Some of them might be a comment about, or if the market has any comments possibly. Before I speak too much.
No, I do, and you know, just generally speaking, keep in mind this is after an informal, so your range of options are limited. If you wanted to do anything with respect to his ability to practice, at this point, the most that we could impose would be a 30-day suspension. If you wanted anything more than that, you would either need to offer him a consent agreement or remand this to formal hearing. Of course, both of those options aren't mutually exclusive. We could offer a consent agreement, and if not accepted, move it forward to a formal hearing.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was thinking. Combining those two ideas of, can we say, hey, limit your practice for the next year, because we will cycle the next year, right?
It is.
When you say, I'm sorry.
I believe this person was already offered a consent agreement, or was talked to one, and was not interested in that type of arrangement where he would stop working.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Dr. Wright, but you know, when you use the word restriction, that is a term of probation that you could impose. Mm-hmm. Keeping in mind though that you know you can't use that, you know, in place of a suspension of more than 30 days. You know, that you're restricting your ability to do anything as a veterinarian. You know, for
that though, in the consent agreement, we can do that. And if he doesn't assign to it, then we will follow that and do whatever we need to do potentially.
So, what would you be thinking?
I was referring to, like, if for some reason you wanted to restrict him from, you know, performing surgery, you could do that in this board order.
Or
a consent agreement that says you're going to stop doing surgery indefinitely.
Yes, for sure.
Excuse me, Mark. I don't believe that the violations support the restriction on stopping practicing surgery. If you want to look at that.
I'm sorry?
I don't know that the violations found in this case.
For the support. Yeah.
Mark?
Well, but again, we can put anything in a consent agreement. If he agrees to it, then good. If not, then you would formally go through an evidentiary process at that point, right?
Yeah.
Because you can put whatever you want in a consent agreement and just see, hey, do you want to do this? Move on, or do we want to go through the formal proceedings and actually put everything on the table and have it go there?
Mark, it would be a 30-day suspension, since we're doing the informal, with a 30-day suspension and a consent agreement that requesting voluntarily quit practicing by surgery. No.
That is kind of mutually exclusive because you're taking dispositive action in the case by suspending his license.
So that's the action.
Yeah.
I mean, in a consent agreement, though, I mean, I think the surgery piece is important because you're trying to limit the high risk things that could happen to patients under what we see as some repetitive problems. And so the fact that he forgot he did a procedure is concerning.
I have a question about that. we didn't find any violations about that, about surgery.
Well, or in the past, they found a violation of he just didn't do it because he forgot to do it. The dental. And I kind of feel like at this point, it's a way, it's however we can word it, that it's time to start phasing out of practice and starting with surgery, which is high risk, where you need to be on your game and need to be up and alert, is probably the place that I would start, and then start phasing into, you're looking for other options, whether it's to buy his practice, I don't know what, if he owns a practice or whatever, but giving him some time to find transition plans for his clients, and you know, you don't want to ever just like shut down if he's a single practitioner and leave these people with no place to go. So like starting to phase through some of that, and that's what I'd be looking for in a consent agreement. He may not agree to it because he may just not want to do that, in which case then we go to a formal. But I just feel like we could at least word it and offer it.
And kind of going along with that, going back to the classes that we can do through group aspect, is there anything around surgery, or is it just general small medicine?
Why, if you want to stop?
Well, again, it's kind of more, can you go through these courses or not? Because again, we're trying to figure out what's the...
Well, one thing, Dr. Wright, members of the board, that you would want to consider, given his history of, you know, in your attempts to rehabilitate him through continuing education, if you were going to go, you know, issue an order today, one of the things that you'd want to consider is requiring a practice monitor to come in, do a full audit, you know, of his practices, make sure that his record keeping, and you'd probably want to, you know, maybe consider a length of time that would be appropriate for you to give you the comfort that this isn't just a quick fix, that, you know, over a sustained period of time, you have evidence that he has, you know, corrected the concerns that were expressed and your conclusions upon.
Yeah, and that's and that actually we're done here, because that's kind of my thought is not like a motion right now, but it's a lot of purpose under here saying let's limit surgeries, we can't do surgeries anymore. Still medicine, have a practice monitor that's there for the next year, and kind of go around that, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of, my kind of view is like, how do you say, hey, is it time to phase out? I mean, because like, I'm just seeing repeated issues, and I don't know if it's because we're overwhelmed or whatever, but whatever the reason is, we're not responding to it. We're not fixing those issues.
And just as a footnote, we can't talk about it. It's not on the agenda, but just last month you opened up, or 2 months ago you opened up another complaint, and he's in the process of complying with that. Mm-hmm. And the interim order that was issued in that was a series of kind of competency evaluations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you should be getting, you know, that information, you know, right after the holidays.
So, I mean, again, we want to address this, but we want to get it right. I mean, is it we're pending this for another month, or do we need to do something this month for sure?
You do not need to take responsive action this month on this case. There's no time limits there.
And we're supposed to have the reports back, or can we even talk about the other case right now?
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
what the dates are on that. I think they may be varied because there's some different evaluations.
No, there's
some
marginal that are like that, but I don't know. I don't know if that's something we should pin for a month, or would a month change anything with any additional information? I guess is the board question.
Based on the board's past discussions over the past few months, the board was in a rush to take some sort of action. And we really don't have true assurances that we will get these reports timely, that these appointments will happen timely. There's no assurance that will happen. And you may be pushing the whole matter down the road when you had expressed that you did not wish to do that.
And if we do a 30-day probation right now, we may not get anything back, but again, do we limit everything, or 30-day suspension, sorry. I mean, do we do that and just totally cut everything off for 30 days and revisit it next month, or do we just table this for a month?
That's your order, you know.
I'm sorry, it's more of a question, kind of throwing it out there to the board members, is do we pen this for a month and revisit next month, or do we say, you know, do a 30-day suspension and revisit it next month again at that point? Or a 30-day suspension, and then it's over.
Well, but, right, it's not what things do. So you can do a 30-day suspension and a practice monitor or whatever you deem appropriate. You know, it's not 30 days.
But that, but I mean, that's the final disposition of if we did that, it's over today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, you can be like, okay, it's 30 days to.
That is correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And when we use the word over.
Sorry, yeah.
You know, what happens is, you know, the order is issued and then the doctor would have 35 days to request a motion for rehearing or review of the board's order. That would come back to you, you know, so.
But after we hit the 30-day mark.
The implementation of the order could still be months away.
So after the 30-day mark, like I said, so let's say we said, we put in a suspension for 30 days now. After the 30-day mark, does it just go back to practice like normal or?
No, you could put him on probation.
For an additional year or something with a practice mark.
Yeah, that would be.
He's still a bit of a mark, he's still like practicing. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that probation doesn't really mean anything.
No, probation just makes us easier for the suspend if we lift the probation.
It's just a period of time of,
yeah,
in which to do the things the board's ordered you to do.
Right, the probation would be like a practice monitoring, things of that nature, if you thought that was the appropriate, you know, way to address this issue.
Now, how fast do the practice, because we typically use Dr. Rule? Or something.
The board doesn't.
Well, we don't use, that's typically who everybody else uses, I apologize. That's who works with most often. Do we know how fast he usually starts recording stuff? I mean, if he would request or a practice monitor requested, what is the typical timeframe to get those things established?
I believe it's, we typically give people 30 days to propose the name of someone for board approval.
And you can certainly expedite that. I mean, that's, you know, that's what we generally do, but there's nothing that would prohibit you from saying, you know, while, you know, on suspension, you need to, you know, submit the name and get pre-approval for a practice monitor so that when the suspension is over, that practice monitor is, you know, ready to get going.
And
what's the purpose of a practice monitor? Isn't it to remedy problems that are in practice? And based on this history, how effective is a practice monitor? Do we think a practice monitor would be?
Well, that's the question, but I mean, going to, I think it's incumbent on us to do our due diligence and to make sure that we give everybody a chance to recover, to rehabilitate themselves. We have to,
yes,
but I don't know if we have with a practice monitor, with a parent there watching. Maybe that will be it, but if doing it himself doesn't help, doing the practice monitor doesn't help, then that's kind of more evidence of where we go from there. I guess that question
would be. Could I just jump in and point out a difference? So the practice monitors that most of you are familiar with have been related to premise violation cases. Mm-hmm. So that practice monitor is specifically looking at potential violations that occur under a premises license. I believe what Mark may be saying as an option is that the practice monitor would be looking at his records and what he does as a doctor, because that's the person he needs looking over his shoulder, is who's looking at his medical care, which is concerning.
Would that monitor have this information?
Yes.
All of this, priors and everything?
Yes, we could give them what we could as promises.
That's all.
Yeah, because typically with a lot of practice monitors, I remember correctly, maybe I don't remember wrong. I mean, yeah, I do a lot of stuff on the premise, and then we say, look at four medical records or whatever for the quarter, and it would be a lot more than four at this point. It would be, I mean, your main focus is looking at these records and kind of audit random exams throughout the day. I don't remember that would be, I don't know. But kind of going with what Dr. Jane said is the 30-day suspension, I mean, it is going to remove the veterinarian from a community that's already strapped, and it's going to put his clients in the lurch. And yes, there are a lot of issues, but except for routine day-to-day medical stuff, is it worth suspending? I mean, because you can just notice anything on surgery, we couldn't say, hey, you can still practice medicine, just not surgery, that because we didn't notice surgery, is that correct?
Well,
so
we have a loose tie because
in the 15-minute
failure to obtain authorization to perform surgery.
True. would be a defensible thing, or even if it's in a consent agreement. If we say, okay, we won't suspend for those 30 days, but we're going to limit what you can do for those 30 days in the consent agreement, saying, do you agree to not do surgery while we're getting practice monitored in place, so then.
I'm a little concerned with putting a responsibility on the practice monitor to judge the level of practice. Like, I'm okay with judging medical records, because that's pretty black and white, but to judge the ability of him to practice, I don't.
And we've got those other evaluations, so, let me.
Yeah.
I think the 30-day suspension is out the window, it doesn't cost what we want to accomplish. Do the consent agreement with restrictions. No surgery, no sedation.
Yeah.
So basically, the vaccine clinic.
Yeah, I mean, coffee, the heart disease, all that, x-rays, yeah, you're still allowed to do it, yeah.
And I'm gonna take the practice monitor in. Because eventually, he's gonna close us down. I mean, that's the idea.
Yeah, but I'm gonna actually run that.
At some point, and so he's either going to agree that he's going to transition out, or failure to sign that consent
goes to a formal,
it's revoked.
Potentially. I don't want to prejudge, but.
As he's transitioning out, we have a practice monitor.
I kind of like the idea of a practice monitor, even if they're just like pulling records and sending them to us to review them. At least they're pulling records and not leaving on the doctor to say, hey, send us the records that you think are adequate, because they're going to pick the ones, of course, they complete it properly. But if the practice monitor goes in there and is pulling random stuff, I think that's probably a better way to do it. Again, I'm not saying that a doctor would do anything untoward and kind of fit around the system, that's not on my mind, but it's always better to have an independent third party saying, okay, I'm going to take this one, and just look and see, oh, we got problems, as opposed to, oh, you can look at this one, oh, you can look at that. So I like the practice monitor in that regard.
Yeah, because I think that while we have a couple of cases that have been brought to court, how many have not? And so it doesn't want to be consistent in how we practice this, because it's been this way since the 90s, so.
Yeah. Very true.
How best do we protect the cop, as well as giving him, a gracious way to end his practice?
But no, I like the consent agreement for restricting or limiting, but not doing surgeries and not doing sedations.
Yeah.
I mean, oral sedation, I think, would be fine. Trazodone, for example, I think that'd be okay with something like that, but not injectable sedations. But I mean,
what about just restricting it to vaccine and all seasons?
I mean, it's possible to do that. Again, it just kind of limits their ability to practice and make a living, which again is not necessarily a factor that we have to take into consideration, but also kind of need to.
But yeah, the end goal is. He's not going to make a living doing that.
Yeah, but if someone came to you
right now. He's going to make a living doing something else.
Yeah, but if someone came to you right now and said, you need to retire tomorrow, I mean, would you be prepared to do that? That'd be hard. So, I mean, you got to plan.
Depending on what they.
What the cost
of pictures they have.
Yeah, true. But I mean, I. That's kind of where I'm at is I like the practice monitor. I like the consent agreement of removing surgery and sedation, injectables, sedation. And. Probation for probably 2 years, because we're going to be continuing education and everything else too, I think. And then revisit the next case and see
why
what that does.
Why?
Well, because I mean, just, I don't want to say a placeholder, but I think it's a
need. I don't want to give him any classes to take when we need. Go see the doctors we're already tired of getting lined up with.
Well,
and get along with that.
I guess my problem, and it's maybe probably a legal question, is again, we do have that second case, which is kind of more.
Which is not agendized.
No, but I mean, I don't want to overstep our bounds on this case and confuse cases. So I don't want to go too far on this case without hearing another one. So that's the biggest thing, is I just want to make sure we're looking at the evidence in front of us right now in this one case.
The evidence in front of us, what you read, all the different things, where we kept adding. Civil penalties kept getting higher, hours kept getting higher, and we still got another case.
Yeah.
So And those two things are ineffective.
No, I know, but when you say, let's do continue, or let's do, I'm sorry, practice restriction with surgery and with sedation, but the practice monitor and all that, I mean, is that adequate enough for you?
Can we do this, can we ask him to provide us with a phase-out plan?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, there's many good questions at discussion that I think that the board may want to go to executive session for legal advice.
I don't think a motion to go to executive session to seek legal advice.
Motion for a second, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
So we will go into executive session.